This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. اللهم صل وسلم وبارك على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين وبعد. So we are reading from تدريب السالك إلى قراءة أقرب المسالك في مذهب مالك رضي الله عنه وأرضاه. Maliki jurisprudence, Maliki fiqh. And in the last session we had completed the fusul, or the issues concerning Salatul Jumu'ah, the Friday congregational prayer. And we are continuing reading about the sunnah prayers. There was a question, I believe, what are the sunnah prayers? We had defined sunnah last time in the Maliki school as generally, when we just say sunnah, it means sunnah mu'akkada, as you find in other schools, or confirm sunnah. So this would include al-witr, which is the last prayer that you do at night after Isha, and it would include the Eidain, the two Eid prayers, and it would include Salat al-Istisqa, which we're going to go over today, which is also the drought prayer, and the Salat al-Kusuf wal-Khusuf, the two eclipse prayers, the solar eclipse and the lunar eclipse. In addition to that, we said that the two rak'ahs before Fajr, for the Subh prayer, which are called Fajr in the Maliki school, is called Raghiba wa Qila Sunnah. So it's either Raghiba, something that's very close to the level of Sunnah, or it is in fact a confirmed Sunnah. And we define the confirmed Sunnah, or Sunnah in the Maliki school, as that which Prophet ﷺ dawam alayha wa lam yatrukha. That which he always did, he didn't leave it, and he encouraged others to do, so then that would be in the category of sunnah. Salat al-Duha and the Rawatib, which are the prayers associated with the five prayers before and after, are not considered sunnah in that sense. In other words, like the same category of those three conditions that the Prophet ﷺ always did and never left and told others to do. He did them sometimes and he left them sometimes. So they have the hukum of al-Nadb. So they're mandub, which means they're recommended to do, but not elevated to the level, as we said, sunnah, as in something that is almost like an obligatory thing, but if you fail to do it, you're not taken to task for it. So I hope that clears the confusion some people had about it regarding those the sunnah prayers. So we're going to read about Salat al-Eidain, the Salah of the two Eids, and they're usually mentioned together because they're virtually identical in terms of everything about them, except some things that are connected with them, like the practices or the adab and the etiquettes. So we will find that, for example, that the Salat Eid al-Fitr, which is the Eid that comes after Ramadan, the first day of Shawwal, that there is going to be a sunnah of eating before going to the prayer, having a date, and not fasting that day, obviously. And you're not allowed to fast any of the Eid days anyway. Whereas in Salat Eid al-Adha, which is the 10th of Dhul-Hijjah, that culminates after the Hajj, people are in Hajj and culminates in the 10th day of Dhul-Hijjah, which is Eid, then it's preferred to actually eat afterwards, after you do your dhabah, after you do your udhiyah, after you sacrifice an animal, if you have the means to do so, which is something specific to Eid al-Adha and is not required nor recommended in Eid al-Fitr. So he says, Rahimahullah, Faslun fi Salat al-Eidaini, chapter concerning the two Eids, or the prayer of the two Eids. Salat al-Eidaini, sunnatun mu'akkadatun liman tajiba alayhi al-Jumu'ah, mandubatun li ghayrihim illa al-Hajj wa ahla Mina. So he said, the Salah of each Eid, the two Eids, and each individual one, sunnah mu'akkada. So it's a confirmed sunnah or a strong sunnah, as we said earlier. لِمَنْ تَجِبُ عَلَيْهِ الْجُمْعَةِ. So for whomever Jum'ah is considered to be obligatory, then the Eid prayer is a sunnah. So that would be the male non-traveler. وَمَنْدُوبَةٌ لِغَيْرِهِمْ. And recommended for others. So the others would be women, children, travelers. So it's recommended for them to go to Salat al-Eid, but it is not considered to be sunnah our confirmed sunnah, as we said about those who Jummah is obligatory upon them. إِلَّا الْحَاجِ وَأَهْلِ مِنَا. But it's not recommended for two other categories of people. Al-Hajj, someone who is on Hajj. And Ahli Mina, those who are staying in Mina during the time of Hajj, also not recommended for the Hajj, because he's going to be busy with doing other things. So on the day of Hajj, if someone is in Hajj, then there's other things they're going to be doing on the 10th of Dhul Hijjah, which are from the Manasik or the rites of Hajj. And so it would not be recommended for them, and nor would they actually find the time to pray the Eid prayer. وهي ركعتان من حل النافلة إلى الزوال. And it is two rak'ahs. When is it to be prayed? من حل النافلة. حل النافلة means when it is permissible to pray after sunrise. And we said in an earlier chapter, قدر الرمح. So like a spear's length from the horizon that you see the sun has risen. And that's usually about 15 minutes, 12 to 15 minutes after sunrise. Then this is the time where you can pray Duha and you can pray Eid. So this is the time that the Eid prayer can begin. إلى الزوال. Until when? الزوال. Till noon. Till noon. So if noon comes about and you haven't prayed Eid yet, then you've actually missed it. يكبر بعد الإحرام ستا وفي الثانية خمسا بعد تكبيرة القيام. How else is the Eid prayer different? There are seven takbiras, or Allahu Akbar, in the beginning. So takbirat al-ihram, which is the fard, it's called the opening takbir. And then there are six after that. And then the imam would only pause between each takbira to hear the ma'mumin, to hear the people behind him say to Allahu Akbar. So we'd say Allahu Akbar, then the people behind Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, seven in the beginning. وفي الثانية, and in the second rak'ah, five. بعد تكبيرة القيام. So five not including the تكبيرة القيام, or the تكبيرة when you're rising from the prostration position. So that's as you're rising from the prostration, you say Allahu Akbar till you're standing upright. Then you would do five more. And then the people behind him would do the same. ولا يفصل إلا بقدر تكبير المؤتم, as we said. And there is no pause between them except to give the people behind him a chance to say the تكبيرة behind him. وتحراه المؤتم إن لم يسمع. This may not be such a thing anymore, but it used to be when you had a very large congregation, especially in Eid, it's very large. You may not hear the imam say the takbira. So he says, تحراه المؤتم. So the مؤتم يتحرى, يعني try to, with your best estimate, say them at the same time or right after the imam, even if you can't hear them. إن لم يسمع, if you can't hear them. في النسيه أو بعضه وتذكره قبل أن يركع أتى به وأعاد القراءة وسجد بعد السلام. إن تذكره بعد أن ركع تركه وسجد قبل السلام ولو تكبيرة واحدة. This is describing the case if you forget one of them, the imam. فإن نسيه أو بعضه وتذكره قبل أن يركع أتى به. So if you forget one of the takbirs, the extra ones, that is, not takbirat al-ihram, because that's obligatory. وَتَذَكَّرُهُ قَبْلَ أَنْ يَرْكَعَ. And then he remembers before he goes into ruku'. So he already started reading the Fatiha and reading the other surah. Then he said, oh wait, I only said four, and not the seven, or not the six, after the takbirat al-ihram. Then he goes back and says the additional Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Then he rereads Fatiha and the surah. This is all if he does it before the ruku'. That's why he says وَأَعَدَ الْقِرَاءَ وَسَجَدَ بَعْدَ السَّلَامِ. Right? And then the sujood al-sahu, the prostration of forgetfulness, is after the salam. Why? Because the rule in the school is that for an extra thing, an added thing, you do the sujood after the salam. So he would give his salam alaykum, and then he would do the sujood, read the shahud again, and then another salam. فإن تذكره بعد أن ركع. However, if he remembers after he goes into ركوع, تركه Tarakahu means don't go back. If you actually were to go back, it would invalidate the prayer. Because you don't leave a fard, which is the ruku'ah, to go back for a sunnah, which is the extra takbir. وَسَجَدَ قَبْلَ السَّلَامِ. And then he would make the sujood before the salam, sujood sahu. Why? Because he omitted something, and the rule says if you omit something, you do the sujood before the salam. وَلَوْ لِتَكْبِيرَةٍ وَاحِدَةٍ. Even if you only forgot one. Why? Because every takbirah is a sunnah. And we said, you only make sujood sahu for the sunan, the sunnahs of the prayer. وَمَنْ أَدْرَكَ الْإِمَامَ قَبْلَ أَنْ يَرْكَعْ أَتَى بِتَكْبِيرٍ. فإن ركع الإمام تركه وتبعه. So أدرك الإمام means someone who came late. من أدرك الإمام قبل أن يركع أتى بتكبير. So if you catch the Imam while he's still standing, then you say the takbir, right? In other words, all seven, even if you're behind him. فإن ركع الإمام, if the Imam, however, makes ركوع, تركه وتبعه. Right, so don't stand there and do the takbir. Go with the imam when he goes into ruku'ah. وَمُدْرِكُ الثَّانِيَةِ يعني الركعة الثانية. If you catch the imam in the second rak'ah, not in the first, as it was mentioned in the first scenario, يُكَبِّرُ خَمْسًا غَيْرَ الْإِحْرَامِ. As we said, then you do five, not including the takbirat al-ihram, if you catch him in the second rak'ah and he's still standing, right? So you do the five, not the seven. وَفِي رَكَعَةِ الْقَضَاءِ سِتًا غير تكبيرة القيام. And then you have one rak'ah to make up, right? And we said the rule in the school is you are going to make up from the first rak'ah the things that were said. So you missed the first rak'ah. So that means you need to do seven takbiras. So rak'ah al-qiyam counts as like the obligatory one, like what you started with. Then you bring six in the second rak'ah. ومثل من أدرك دون رك'ah. And the same for the person who makes less than a rak'ah. Like you caught him in the tashahud at the end. They came late to Eid, you were, you know, getting your coiffure all set up and your suit, and you drove late, and oh my God, the people are already in the tashahud. Did you miss Eid? No, you made Eid, but you just have to make up in the manner that we said here. So you do seven and then five, not including the qiyam, so six. If you catch him in the tashahud, and then he says, Assalamu alaikum, then you rise and you say, Allahu Akbar. Then you bring another six, then you've done the seven, then you do the second rak'ah the same way with five. وَنُدِبَ إِحْيَاءُ لَيْلَتَيِ الْعِيدَيْنِ. Now he's mentioning some of the things that are recommended. So, إِحْيَاء لَيْلَةِ الْعِيدِ means to spend the night before in prayer, in dhikr, in remembrance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So you can do like one-third, the last one-third, the last one-sixth, or the whole night if you're able to do it. Which is the opposite of what most people do today. They say, oh, Ramadan's over now, it's time to celebrate. And, you know, they watch all the TV that they missed out on during the month or the things that they didn't get to do during the month. And then they, it's said that from the nights that are recommended, specific nights in the year that are recommended to have Ihya al-Layla, to spend the night in prayer, are the two Eid nights, which is the two nights before. And Sha'ban, the 15th of Sha'ban, and then all of the nights of Ramadan, obviously. وَغُسْلٌ يَدْخُلُ وَقْتُهُ فِي السُّدُسِ الْأَخِيرِ. And also to do the purificatory bath, recommended. يَدْخُلُ وَقْتُهُ فِي السُّدُسِ الْأَخِيرِ مِنَ اللَّيْلِ. So in the last sixth of the night, that's when you can begin to do the ghusl, or after Fajr, whatever. وَكَوْنُهُ بَعْدُ الصُّبْحِ أَفْضَلُ, as he says, and after Fajr prayer is better. وَتَزَيَّنٌ وَتَطَيُّبٌ وَإِنْ لِغَيْرِ مُصَلِّنٍ. And also to have تَزَيُّن and تَطَيُّب. تَزَيُّن means wear your best clothes, nice clothes. وَتَطَيُّب means to wear perfume. So for men, they could wear it outside. For women, the تَزَيُّن and the تَطَيُّب would be in their house, not outside. وَإِنْ لِغَيْرِ مُصَلِّنٍ. Even if you're not participating in the prayer that day, like a woman who's menstruating or something like that, still it's Eid for her, so she should, you know, wear nice things if she likes and that sort of thing inside her house. وَمَشْيٌ فِي الذِّهَابِ وَإِبْدَالُ الطَّرِيقِ فِي الرُّجُوعِ. And to walk, if you can, towards the Musalla al-Eid, where you're going to pray Eid. وَإِبْدَالُ الطَّرِيقِ فِي الرُّجُوعِ. And taking a different route on the way back. They said the wisdom behind this is twofold. One Remember, this is a congregation of people that you may only see once in a year. So if you take a different way on the way back, you're going to see different people than you saw going. And also it says that the malaika are going to be present. So there'll be different groups of malaika, inshallah, that will greet you on the way going as opposed to the way back. وَفِطْرٌ قَبْلَ الْغُدُوِّ وَكَوْنُهُ عَلَى تَمْرٍ وَتَأْخِيرُهُ فِي النَّحْرِ وَالْأَفْضَلُ لِلْمُضَحِّ الْإِفْطَارُ عَلَى شَيْءٍ مِنْ أُضْحِيَتِهِ. This is concerning about what we said earlier about eating. وَفِطْرٌ قَبْلَ الْغُدُوِّ وَكَوْنُهُ عَلَى تَمْرٍ. So if it's Eid al-Fitr, after Ramadan, first of Shawwal, then to have tamar, to have a date or dates before you go, is the recommended thing to do. وَتَأْخِيرُهُ فِي النَّحْرِ. And then to delay eating until after you get back and have slaughtered your animal, if you're going to slaughter an animal, and then to eat from that, is what's recommended for Eid al-Adha. Even though we know in Eid al-Adha, you can slaughter any of the 4 days. So you can slaughter the day of Eid or any of the 3 days afterwards.
وَالتَّكْبِيرُ جَهْرًا فِي الْغُدُوِّ لِلْعِيدَيْنِ إِلَى الشُّرُورِ فِي الصَّلَاةِ وَيُوَعْوِدُهُ سِرًّا فِي سَكَتَاتِ الْخَطِيبِ بَعْدَ تَكْبِيرِهِ. وَالتَّكْبِيرُ جَهْرًا, which means to say the takbir, جَهْرًا, out loud, فِي الْغُدُوِّ لِلْعِيدَيْنِ, as you are heading towards, making out towards al-Eid. And simply, you could say, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, 3 times, or you can say, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, la ilaha illallah, wa ilaha ilhamd. Oh, and then there is the siga of Imam al-Shafi'i, Allahu Akbar kabira, wa hamdulillahi kathira, wa subhanallah bukratan wa asila, ila akhirihi. This also, all of that is at the very least permissible, ja'iz, or even recommended. And then in the two Eids, you would say the takbir, illa shururi fi salah. And you continue to say the takbir until they start the Eid prayer. Then you would stop saying it. وَيُوَعَوِدُهُ سِرًّا فِي سَكَتَاتِ الْخَطِيبِ بَعْدَ تَكْبِيرِهِ. And after the imam prays, and then he starts his khutbah, the two khutbahs, which is also sunnah, that comes after the prayer. Then he said, فِسَكَتَاتِهِ, when he's not speaking, you could say it sirran. And you say, Allahu Akbar, within yourself. وَإِقَاعُهُمَا بِالْمُصَلَّى إِلَّا بِمَكَّةِ. And to have the Eid prayers done in what's called al-musalla, rather than the masjid. Of course, for those who are able to do so. In some countries, like the Gulf countries, they actually have particular areas, open areas in the desert, that are big, that are set up for the Eid prayer. And the reason for this is because the number is so many people. If it was in the masjid, it would not really hold all of those people who want to go. So they have it in a big open area. Except for Mecca. Why Mecca? Well, Mecca is big to begin with, and number two, Masjid al-Haram has khususiyah. It has a special place because of the tawaf and so forth, so it's better even to do it in the Haram, in Mecca, and anywhere else. It's better to do it in the Musalla. But if you can't do it there, then any place.
وَصَلَاتُهُمَا لِمَنْ فَاتَتْهُ مَعَ الْإِمَامِ.
If you miss it with the Imam, then you can make it up, as we said, by yourself until the Zawal. High noon.
وَقِرَاءَتُهُمَا بِسَبِّحْ وَالشَّمْسِ.
The read in the first rakah, سَبِّحْ اسْمَ رَبِّكَ الْأَعْلَى الَّذِي خَلَقَ فَسَوَّى. And in the second one, الشَّمْسِ وَضُحَاهَا. Or you can read any other surah or something like الْغَاشِيَة, السَّبَّحْ وَالْغَاشِيَة. Or you can read الْغَاشِيَة and وَالشَّمْسِ. Or you can read الْغَاشِيَة وَاللَّيْلِ إِذَا يَخْشَى. All of those are permissible. So like what's called from Wasat al-Mufassal, the middle length surahs from the Juz Amma.
وَخُطْبَتَانِ كَالْجُمْعَةِ لَهُمَا وَبَعْدِيَّتُهُمَا وَاسْتِفْتَاحُهُمَا بِتَكْبِيرٍ وَتَخْلِيلُهُمَا بِهِ بِلَحَدٍ.
And then the two khutbas, like in Jum'ah, كَالْجُمْعَةِ, except that they come afterwards, they come after the prayer, not before. And that they are to be opened with Allahu Akbar rather than Alhamdulillah. Because the dhikr of Eid is the takbir. Even though we have Alhamdulillah, but the dhikr of Eid that's specific to it is the takbir.
وَتَخْلِيلُهُمَا بِهِ بَلَحَدْ.
And also during the khutbah, the imam can say Allahu Akbar periodically.
واستماعهما. And obviously to listen to the khutbah, the two khutbahs, is required or recommended. So don't think that the Eid is finished, everyone prays and gets up and leaves, and the Imam is talking, as many people do. But one should sit and listen to the two khutbahs. And also on the Imam's part, the day of Eid is not the day to go into your two-hour lesson that you want to give the people, because you only get to see them on Eid, and so you want to, you know, they should ra'i al-wasat, yani, to have balance. And, you know, I don't think you should go on more than 10, 15, 20 minutes maximum. Allahu a'lam.
والتكبير إثر خمس عشرة فريضة من ظهر يوم النحر إلى الصبح يوم الرابع.
So for the Malikis, the takbirat, as in the other schools, for Eid al-Adha, continue after the prayer. And there are no takbirs the day before the prayer, like in the Hanafi school, for example, from Yom Arafah. So in the Maliki school, they begin the day of, the morning of the prayer, and then for 15 prayers afterwards. So he says, Takbir ithi khamsa ashta farida min dhuhri yawm al-Nahri. Yawm al-Nahri is the day of Eid al-Adha. So that's four prayers on that day. And then ila subhi yawm al-Raba. And then five and five, so that's 14. And then on the fourth day, only during the morning prayer, the subah prayer. So by the fourth day on the dhuhr time, you stop doing the takbir.
فَإِن نَسِيَ كَبَّرَ إِن قَرُبَ وَلَفْظُهُ اللَّهُ أَكْبَرَ ثَلَاثًا فَإِن زَادَ بَعْدَهُ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ وَاللَّهُ أَكْبَرُ وَلَهُ الْحَمْدُ فَحَسَن.
So if you forget to say the takbir after the prayer, وَلَكِن قَرُبَ, like you're still in the masjid, you didn't leave, then you can still say it. Otherwise, you don't have to. وَلَفْظُهُ, as we said, you say Allahu Akbar three times. And if you add after that, لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ وَاللَّهُ أَكْبَرُ وَلَهُ الْحَمْدُ فَحَسَن. That's good too.
وَكُرِهَ تَنَفُّلٌ لِلْمُصَلَّى.
And it's disliked to pray any tanaful, any type of nafil prayer with the musalla, unless it's the masjid. If it's a masjid, then you can go and you could pray tahayyat al-masjid. But anywhere else, like a conference room, convention center, like people that they rent, then one should just simply go, say the takbira, sit down, and then wait for salat al-Eid. Wallahu a'lam. So that's the Eid prayer. As we said, it's a strong sunnah. The next one after that, فصل في صلاة الكسوف والخسوف. So section concerning the prayer of the solar eclipse and of the lunar eclipse. So as we know, generally the solar eclipse is when the sun is blocked by the moon, and that happens during the day. And the lunar eclipse is the opposite, when the sun gets in the way of the earth and the moon, and so the moon then, which would be normally a full moon night, the moon is blocked. So solar eclipse and lunar eclipse, and there are different rules for each in the Maliki school.
سنة وتأكد لكسوف الشمس ولو بعضا ركعتان.
So for the kusuf, the solar eclipse, it is sunnah, وتأكد, يعني strong sunnah, even if it's a partial solar eclipse, doesn't have to be a full lunar eclipse,
ركعتان,
two rak'as, but these rak'as are unlike other rak'as.
يُكَبِّرُ وَيَقْرَأُ الْفَاتِحَ وَسُورَةً.
So how is it different? You say Allahu Akbar, and then you read the Fatiha and a surah afterwards, a chapter.
وَيَرْكَعُ,
then you go down into ruku'a.
ثُمَّ يَرْفَعُ,
then you go back up, you don't go into sujood. So it's not like any other prayer.
ثُمَّ يَرْفَعُ, then you go back up. وَيَقْرَأُ الْفَاتِحَ وَسُورَةً,
then you read the Fatiha and then you read another surah.
ثُمَّ يَرْكَعْ وَيَرْفَعْ,
then you go into sujood. So you're doing like a double. So two fatihas and two surahs, in between them is ruku'ah. Then you're going to do a second ruku'ah, and then you're going to go back up and then go down for sujood, as normally you would do.
وَيَفْعَلْ فِي الثَّانِيَ كَذَلِكَ,
and you do the same thing in the second raka'ah. And in the sahih hadith that the Prophet ﷺ actually read with Surah Al-Baqarah in the first qira'ah, and then one of the ayahs says Surah An-Nisa, and then after that he read Surah Ali Imran. So, and then he would spend a similar amount of time in the ruku'ah, as long as it took him to read Surah Al-Baqarah, he would spend in the bowing.
in the ruku'ah. And then as long as you spend in the bowing, he would spend in the prostration. So it's not required for us to do that, to read that long. They said in the longer commentaries that the imam should pay attention to the state of the people and also the state of the sun. So you don't want to be still praying if the eclipse is over. That's the whole idea. So you only want to be praying as long as the eclipse is going on and not longer than that.
وَوَقْتُهَا كَالْعِيدَيْنِ
And it's time to be prayed like the two Eid prayers, which means anywhere from right after sunrise, typically, till noon, till the Dhuhr time. What if it happens after that? What if the solar eclipse is after Dhuhr, after Asr? One of the main opinion in the school says then you don't do the eclipse prayer. So it has to be between the Zawal, the time that normally would be from after sunrise until the Dhuhr time, the time of Dhuha yani. Another opinion says you would do it anyway, wallahu a'lam. But the stronger opinion is that you would not do it then, because the time for such a supererogatory voluntary prayer would be during the time, you know, when there are no obligatory prayers, which is between the sunrise until the Dhuhr time.
ويستحب, and it's recommended, and this is what we said earlier, القراءة فيها بطوال سرا.
And also to read with long surahs, sirran, silently. So why? Because the day prayers are silent prayers. So that means the imam, he could be reading Surah Al-Baqarah silently. So you're just standing there, you don't even know what he's reading. So some of them said that if someone's going to do that, then they could read themselves the Baqarah if they're doing that. And some of them said, well, the imam could read aloud if he feels like the people will not be able to take it. And again, you don't have to read Surah Al-Baqarah. It could be something, you know, less than that, like Yasin, perhaps would be more of a middle path.
وَتَطْوِيلَ الرُّكُوعِ وَالسُّجُودِ نَحْوٌ مِنَ الْبَقَرَةِ إِلَّا لِخَوْفِ خُرُوجِ وَقْتٍ أَوْ ضَرَرِ مُؤْتَمٍ
As we said earlier. So, like the sujood, like the Surah Al-Baqarah, إِلَّا except لِخَوْفِ خُرُوجِ وَقْتٍ except if you feel like the time will go out, like Dhuhr time will come in, or the solar eclipse is over anyway. أو ضرر مؤتم, or it's going to bring some sort of hardship on the people behind you.
وَنُضِبَ وَعْظٌ بَعْدِهَا وَفِعْلُهَا فِي الْمَسْجِدِ وَجَمَعَ
And it's also recommended, يعني المندوب,
وَعْظٌ بَعْدَهَا
To have a wa'z, to have like a, it's not a khutbah, but just like a small word, kalima, admonition.
وَفِعْلُهَا فِي الْمَسْجِدِ
And to be done in the mosque. The prayer that is, وَجَمَعَ, and to be done in congregation.
وَتُدْرَكُ الرَّكَعَةُ بِالرُّكُوعَ الثَّانِي Just like in any other prayer.
If you make the imam before he goes into comes up from the ruku'ah in the second rak'ah, then you have made the solar eclipse prayer.
وَيُنْدَبُ لِخُسُوفِ الْقَمَرِ رَكَعَتَانِ كَالنَّوَافِلِ
However, for the lunar eclipse, it's different. Lunar eclipse generally is going to happen at night.
Rak'atan kan nawafil.
So you do two rak'ahs, but not like the ones we just described, like a regular two rak'ahs.
وَتَكْرَارُهُمَا حَتَّى يَنْجَلِيَ أَوْ يَغْرُبْ أَوْ يَطَّلَعُ الْفَجْرِ مَنْدُوبٌ أَخْرٌ
And then, here it's different. Number one, you do it not necessarily in a congregation. And number two, you pray two rak'ahs, two rak'ahs, two rak'ahs until the lunar eclipse is over. So you wouldn't read long surahs necessarily in each of the in the two rak'ahs, but you would continue to pray the two until the lunar eclipse is over or until the moon sets. You can no longer see the moon, not because of the eclipse, because it's late at night, or until the fajr, or until fajr comes, if the lunar eclipse is still happening. But generally, lunar eclipses, I think the last one that I saw in North America, it took like maybe 2 hours, 2.5, maybe 3, from beginning all the way to a full eclipse until after dissipating.
وَهَذَا مَنْدُوبٌ أَخَرٌ
To continue to do it, that's another mandub, or you can just do signify it by doing the first two rak'ahs, and then you don't necessarily have to do anything after that. Then the last of the sunnah prayers that he's going to talk about here before he talks about the funeral prayer,
فَصْلٌ فِي صَلَاتِ الْإِسْتِسْقَاءِ
And this is called the prayer of drought, the drought prayer. Literally, it means istisqa, which is to seek a saqi, which is to seek water for your crops or your irrigation. So if you may be asking for it because of a drought, or in the old days of the Nile, before the Aswan Dam was built, the Nile would overflow its banks in the spring periodically. And if it didn't overflow its banks, then the crops didn't get irrigated. So they would also do istisqa on that occasion. So he says, يُسَنُّ لِمُحْتَاجٍ شَرَابٍ أَوْ سَقْيِ زَرَعٍ. So it is sunnah for someone who is in need of water for thirst, right? So you may even do it if you're out in the middle of the desert and there's no water anywhere to be found. You might do Salat al-Istisqa. أَوْ سَقْيِ زَرَعٍ, or to seek irrigation of crops because there's not enough. صَلَاتُ رَكْعَتَيْنِ كَسَعْرِ النَّوَافِ, to pray two rak'ahs like the rest of the nawafil that we mentioned, so not like the lunar or the solar eclipse, but a regular two rak'ahs. وَقْتُهَا كَالْعِيدَيْنِ, and again, the time to be prayed between after sunrise until dhuhr time.
وَبَعْدَهُمَا خُطْبَتَانِ فِيهِمَا وَعْظٌ وَتَذْكِيرٌ وَيُخَلَّلُهُمَا بِالْإِسْتِغْفَارِ.
So after you do the prayer, like Salat al-Eid, you do khutbah, two khutbahs afterwards. And fihima wa'ad wa tadhkir, there's remembrance of Allah and there's admonition. Wa yukhalliluhuma bil istighfar. So the dhikr of the istisqa is more about istighfar, because the presumption is people are in the position that they're in because of their sins, because of their shortcomings. Dhahar al-fasadu fil barri bil bahri bima kasabat aydi an-nas. Right, the fasad, even in the natural resources in barri wal bahr, in land and sea, is because of that people have earned by their hands in terms of sins. So the dua here is istighfar. For Jum'ah, it's alhamdulillah, and for Eid, it's Allahu Akbar, as we went over. And it said that even here, when the khatib does the khutbah, he's not supposed to stand on the minbar. Stand on the level of the ground, because it's about humility, not about being raised above the people.
ثم يستقبل الخطيب القبلة قائما ويحول رداءه ويجعل ما على منكبه الأيمن على منكبه الأيسر وكذلك الرجال وهم جلوس ثم يدعو باتهال وتضرع وهم يؤمنون.
Then something unique to the رداء استسقاء. The khatib, after he's done with the khutbah, turns around, faces the qibla, and if he has a rida', which is just like a shawl that's over his shoulders, he is to take it off and then flip it around like this. So what was on the right now is on the left, and what was on the left is now on the right, and then he puts it back on his shoulders. He does that while standing, and the rest of the men, if they are there, sitting, they remain sitting and do the same thing.
وَكَذَلِكَ رِجَالُهُمْ جُلُوسًا. ثُمَّ يَدْعُو بِابْتِهَالٍ وَتَضَرَّعًا.
Then he makes dua, and ibtihal, you know, seeking Allah's forgiveness. وَهُمْ يُؤَمِّنُونَ, and they are to say Ameen. And it signifies kind of a tawbah, signifies repentance or istighfar, and you know, turning over kind of a new leaf, so to speak. So putting the right on the left and the left on the right is signifying this.
وَتَكْرَارُهُ إِذَا لَمْ يَحْصُلْ السَّقْيُ الْكَافِي.
And this istisqa, the prayer itself, can be repeated, you know, days after, one after the other, until it starts to rain or until the water comes.
ويستحب, and it's recommended, أن يخرج له ضحا ماشين ببذلة وانكسار ولا يتخلف عنها إلا شابة أو غير مميز. ولا يقيمونها لغيرهم ولكن يدعون لهم.
And it is recommended that they go out during the duha time, walking, bibadlatin wa inkisar, yani the opposite of Eid. So not wearing their best clothes, but wearing like clothes of humility. And it's also said, it's not mentioned here, that they should fast, you know, the day before, and they should make tawbah, and the imam should remind them 3 days before, we're going to do istisqa, now it's time to fast and seek forgiveness, and so forth.
وَأَلَّا يَتَخَلَّفْ عَنْهَا إِلَّا الشَّابَّ أَوْ غَيْرُ مَيْزٍ.
Everybody should go, except someone who would cause a problem, like or someone who's غير مميز, like a young boy who can't, or a young girl can't tell what's going on, infant يعني. Otherwise, everyone should go. And even if they have animals with them that they could bring, some of them bring their animals with them.
وَلِيُقِيمُونَهَا لِغَيْرِهِمْ وَلَكِنْ يَدْعُونَ لَهُمْ.
And if someone else in the Ummah somewhere is having this issue with istisqa, like the people, for example, in Australia, then they're the ones who should do the prayer, not people in North America. People in North America would pray for them and ask Allah to, you know, give them and fulfill their needs, but they would not do it on their behalf. So the ones who are directly affected would be the ones who would be doing the istisqa. Wallahu a'lam.
So the next chapter, which is the last chapter in Salah before we get to Zakah, deals with the funeral prayer, and we'll start it, perhaps finish it. Bab. So this is before we had a fasl, we had a section. This is a chapter.
فِيمَا يَجِبُ لِلْمَيِّتِ الْمُسْلِمِ.
That which is required for the deceased of the Muslims or the deceased Muslim.
يجب غسل الميت المسلم ولو صغيرا إن تحققت حياته بعد الولادة إلا شهيد المعترك في قتال الكفار.
So it's an obligation upon those who are taking care of the deceased. So it's not the deceased's obligation. The obligation upon the deceased is at least to write a will or to have a wasiyah and let people know that I want this done for me after I pass away. Usually in a Muslim country, that's a given. But if you're not in a Muslim country, especially if you have non-Muslim relatives, then I would say it's required for you to write something indicating how you want your body to be taken care of or disposed of after you pass away. And I've heard many cases of people who didn't do that, who were Muslim, and you know, they got cremated, and the family of the deceased who were not Muslim kind of did that. So it's a good practice, and I would say a required practice to, even if you have a Muslim family, to say, I want my body to be washed in the way of the Sunnah. So then it becomes an obligation upon those who are closest, or it's a communal obligation. So the community is obligated to take care of the deceased.
يَجِبُ غَسْلُ الْمَيِّتِ الْمُسْلِمِ وَلَوْ صَغِيرًا.
So it's obligatory to wash the body, even if it's a child or an infant.
إِن تَحَقَّقَتْ حَيَاتُهُ بَعْدَ الْوِلَادَةِ.
So that would mean if they even lived a second after birth. So not a stillborn baby. So even a baby that lived for moments after birth. In other words, it was born and it breathed life, and then it, لا قدر الله, it passed away. That baby would be buried, and it would also have ghusl.
يَجِبُ.
I would say, though, for those people who have a stillborn baby, they can still wash it and they can still bury it, but it's not required to do it.
إِلَّا شَهِيدُ الْمُعْتَرَكُ.
Except, who are the exceptions who are not to be washed?
شَهِيدُ الْمُعْتَرَكُ فِي قِتَالِ الْكُفَّارِ.
So the shaheed of battle, right? The shaheed who dies in qital, who dies in fighting, in a just war, in a just fight against non-Muslims, not against other Muslims. So not sectarian violence, even though nowadays we hear that all the time, that we call these people shuhada. They may be shuhada, but not in the sense of do they have this particular aspect to them that their bodies are not to be washed. No, it has to be against non-Muslims and not Muslims fighting one another. Because it's not called في سبيل الله at that point. It's called رد السائل, يعني to قتل البغاة. So that's a different ruling. And even though it could be a just fight, right? People who claim Islam but are terrorists, and there are militaries who are taking on those people, technically we wouldn't call them shaheed according to the Nas, according to this text, even though they're shaheed in meaning, but not in terms of how we treat the body. Wallahu a'lam. That was the opinion that I understand here.
وَوَكَ غُسْلِ الْجَنَابَةِ إِجْرَاءً وَكَمَالًا.
And this purificatory bath, this ghusl, is exactly like the ghusl that we do for the live person after sexual intercourse or janaba.
إِجْرَاءً,
oh, afwan, إِجْزَاءً وَكَمَالًا. So in terms of how we do it, and in the same style, and that which is required, it's the same thing as required of the deceased body. ويندب تنظيفه قبل ذلك بكسدر مع الماء وبعده بماء فيه كافور. And it's recommended that there's a cedar leaves, which is a type of green, sort of evergreen leaf that can be crumbled, and for that to be mixed with the water, that should be one of the washings. Prior to the ghusl, وبعده, and then after you do the ghusl washing, which is all parts of the body, بماء فيه كافور. كافور is another type of مادة that has a smell that smells good, but it's supposed to keep away insects and animals and things like that in the grave. And so that will be the last washing with it. So three washings. So one with sidr, and one with just water, and then one with kafur. وتكفينه, and also the تكفين, الكفن, which is the burial shroud. والواجب منه ما يستر جميع الجسد. So the purely obligatory aspect is that which covers the whole body. So technically that could be done with one sheet, whether male or female. That's not the perfect way, but it's minimally obligatory is to cover them at least with one sheet so the whole body is covered. والكامل, here he says الكامل, إزار وقميص وعمامة ولفافتان. This is for the man. So the camel, the perfect way would be إزار, right, which is the wrap around the waist, قميص, which is wrap around the upper body, وعمامة, which is the turban, ولفافتان, and then two sheets on top of that, one and two. So in total, five, right? The إزار, the قميص, the عمامة, and the two sheets, so that's five. وللمرأة كذلك بزيادة لفافتين وإبدال العمامة بالخمار. For the woman, it would be seven. So the same thing, except you'd have two extra sheets, and those the long ones, the tall ones that you do over the whole body. So she has a total of four, and instead of the imama, the turban, you do a khimar, like a hijab. Instead, and it comes all over and covers her hair and everything like that. ويندب تطيب الكفن ووضع قطن فيه حنوت على منافذه ومراقيه. And also, to have some musk, tatyib, yani it could be any type of perfume. Generally, and then some cotton that also has some type of sweet-smelling thing, especially in the manafidh, so like the nostrils, the ears, just a place around here. And also to put the, you can also put the musk or the perfume on the places of sujood. So the forehead, the nose, the palms, the knees, and the toes. All of that is mandub, it's not required. So the minimally required thing, ghusl, like you do a ghusl for a live person, and then at least one sheet that would cover the whole body, right? Preferably something, not see-through obviously, you want something thick enough. That's why for the woman they say two extra ones, because you want to make a little bit, be extra sure that nothing can be seen through. There was a time, it used to be the kefen, the bearer shroud was actually an expensive thing, and people would actually rob graves just to get at that. Nowadays, that's not really, it doesn't have any value. You could go to Target and buy a big white sheet, any number of them, and it's not really something that's going to cost people a lot of money. So in our time, it's best to go with the completeness. There's no really no reason why you would not do anything short of that, because it's much, much more costly to actually bury, to the burial costs outside of the shroud. That's the least expensive thing.
والصلاة عليه من فروض الكفاية.
And also a communal obligation is the prayer upon the deceased.
وأركانها النية وقيام وأربع تكبيرات ودعاء بينهن للميت بما تيسر والسلام.
So in the Maliki school, it's four takbirat, like any other schools. There's no sujood, there's no ruku'. It's standing the whole time. And there's four takbirat, so the first pillar of the prayer is the intention, as we said, and the qiyam and standing, and then the four takbirat. And the dua between each takbirah. So you would say, Allahu Akbar, raising the hands only in the first one, and then you would make a dua. And the minimum you could say, Allah maghfir lahu, warhamhu, or if it's a woman,
المغفر لها وارحمها. In the Maliki school, the Fatiha is not wajib. It's not like in the Shafi'i school. The Shafi'i school will tell you that the Fatiha and then the second part of the Tashahud, which is the Salat al-Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, then the dua for the deceased, and then after the fourth one, dua for the deceased and for Muslims in general. So generally, my personal practice, I try to combine both. لِلْخُرُوجِ عَنِ الْخِلَافِ, right? Especially if you have people behind you and they want to feel like you read the Fatiha. So I usually tell people read the Fatiha and then at least make a short dua. اللهم اغفر له وارحمه, and then you've done both and you haven't contravened the Maliki school in any way whatsoever.
وَمَنْ أَدْرَكَ الْإِمَامَ فِي الدُّعَاءِ فَلَا يُحْرِمُ إِلَّا عَنْدَ تَكْبِيرِهِ وَيَقْضِي مَا فَاتَهُ بعد السلام الإمام فإن رفعت الجنازة تابع التكبير بلا دعاء ثم سلم.
So someone who's late, what do they do? أدرك الإمام في الدعاء. So if you make him in between one of the takbiras, يعني in دعاء, فلا يحرم إلا عند تكبيره. So don't go into the prayer until he says his next takbira. Just wait.
ويقضي ما فاته بعد السلام الإمام.
After the Imam says salam, then you make up the takbiras that you missed.
فإن رفعت الجنازة تابع التكبير بلا دعاء ثم سلم.
If he's making them up and then they see they're moving the janazah, he doesn't want to miss it, then he just says the takbirs with no dua. So they're moving. Okay, Allahu Akbar twice, Salaam alaykum wa rahmatullah. Then he moves with the janazah.
ثم سلم. ويجب دفنه ولو شهيدا أو سقطا. وحد الواجب ما يحفظه من الهوام.
And it's obligatory to bury the person, except if they're a shaheed al-mu'tarak, as we said. Everyone has to be buried, walaw shaheedan, even if it's a shaheed, even if someone who is died in battle, then they're buried the way they are, but they're still buried. Like Sayyidina Hamza, Sayyid al-Shuhada, was buried the way he was in Uhud. And it said that was only years, not too long ago, that area became flooded. They had to move the body, and then people who were there actually saw the body was still the way that it was, even with the blood still in the same place.
Radiallahu anhu. So the shaheed is put in the, is buried, and the siqt, which is the person, the baby is born, stillborn.
So even though we may not do ghusl, we still should bury the stillborn baby, and not just let the hospital dispose of it like it's nothing.
وحد الواجب ما يحفظه من الهوام.
How deep should it go, or how should it be done? At least deep enough that it's protected from animals that would try to dig it up, or you know, wolves, fox, things like that, that would try to dig it up. So generally that's 6 feet is kind of the standard, but I think you could probably get away with 4 feet, 4.5.
The exception to that would be they mentioned this specifically in Egypt,
where you find that bodies are often buried above ground, especially in the Nile Delta. And the reason for that is literally you dig 6 inches and there's water, because it's extremely fertile, and the Nile Delta region, the water reaches everywhere. So in that case, the ulama, so it's not the rumor that people said they're burying like they did in the pharaonic times, because Egyptians are pharaonic. It's a rumor spread by some people who don't know anything. The reason for it, and the Arnamet gave the fatwa during their day, is because if you put the body in the water, it's going to ruin the body. So they built kind of these mausoleum type structures above ground in order to bury. And you find where there is no water issue, they bury below ground, like in the desert, so forth. So you would not bury above ground except for some pressing reason like that.
ويستحب تعميقه إلى الكتف أو الوسط.
And this is to make it the grave deep enough so that it covers, obviously, you know, the whole body. But he said at least the shoulder or the wasat, or the, you know, so it should be deep enough.
واللحد والوضع اليمين مقبلا.
So the lahad, there's two types of ways that you can bury. The lahad and the shaq. So the lahad is you actually dig deep and you make kind of a build around the body. So in all scenarios, we would not put dirt directly on the body. You know, we would not like take shovels and put directly on the body. We would have a lahad, which would be like, use bricks to build around the body, as it's, and you make a space just big enough for the body to put it on its right side, and then you put, you know, bricks around it. Nowadays, that might not be easy, so sometimes we use actually the wooden coffin itself. Not put them in the coffin, but use the box part of it over that. Or sometimes they put a concrete slab over that, over the body, and then put the dirt on top. That would be the lahad. The shaq would be to actually dig to the side, like a compartment, and then put the body in the compartment and then close it up after that. So it's really over here rather than over here. So the lahad in the Maliki school is preferred. والوضع على اليمين مقبلا, which means towards the qibla. So put him on the right side towards the qibla. وقول الواضع, the one who puts him in the grave, to say بسم الله وعلى سنة رسول الله اللهم تقبل تقبله بأحسن قبول. Dua for the deceased, بسم الله, and on the sunnah of رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم, Allah may accept him with the best acceptance. وصد عليه بلبن أو لوح, as we said, صد عليه, this is the lahad. So لبن, here, lebin, mish leben. There's a joke actually about that. So the lebin is the plural of lebina. Lebina means brick. I was told on an authority, a person actually saw this, that in a particular country where Arabic is not the main language, or they didn't have fuqaha, whatever the reason might be, that they read this, and they took a, he saw people take a big, huge pot, bowl of milk, and pour it on the body while it's in the grave. It's like, what are you doing? He said, it says in the books, وَصُدَّ عَلَيْهِ بِلَبَنْ. Laban would be milk, with fatha on the ba'. أَمَّا الْلَبِنْ كَسْرَ عَنْ دَبَاءَ. This means, مِنَ اللَّبِنَةِ اللَّبِنَاتِ, bricks. So, أَوْ لَوْحٍ, right? Or, like as we said, a slab, wood, concrete, whatever, to be put on top, and then the dirt. وَيُقَالْ حِنَئِذٍ, then when you do that, اللَّهُمَّ إِنَّ صَاحِبِنَا قَدْ نَزَلَ بِكْ وخلف الدنيا وراء ظهره وافتقر إلى ما عندك اللهم ثبت عند المسألة منطقه ولا تبتله في قبره بما لا طاقة له به والحق بنبي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم. يعني دعاء for the deceased at that time. ويستحب زيارة القبور بلا حد, and is recommended to visit the graves without restriction. بلا حد means without restriction. So one can visit the graves lil-a'tibar, which means to, you know, to recall death and to remind oneself of death. That's a good reason. And one could also visit to visit a particular person, right? Or to visit someone from as-salihin or al-anbiya or al-awliya also, because we believe there's a connection between the deceased person and the place that they are buried, even though they may not be limited to that particular place.
ويكره تجصيصها والبناء عليها وقد يحرم لما يعرض من قصد المباهاة أو فتنة لصاحب أو وقفية الأرض ويستفعيها.
So it's disliked for the تجصيص, which means to kind of put plaster over it and plaster over it and make like a بناء. Like a what would be a tomb, basically. But there's a reason for this. Here it said is disliked. وَيَحْرُمْ, and it's haram, if someone intends with it mubaha. Mubaha means like, you know, out of pride and to say, oh look, this is a distinguished person. Like if someone wants that for themselves. Or if the land where he's being buried is waqf. It's an endowment. So you'll be taking up a larger space than what is allotted to you. And so the fatwa of like Al-Izz ibn Abd al-Salam in Egypt a long time ago, and people didn't understand that, it was because Qarafat Misr, that the Arafa of Egypt is waqf. And so he said that people shouldn't build tombs there because they're taking up much more space than they are allotted. Some of the mutaakhirin, the later ulama, they said one can write the name on it and make a kind of symbol or distinction, especially if it's a distinguished person. Not if they were distinguished because of dunya, but distinguished because of what we think about them in terms of akhirah. So if they're from Ahlul Bayt or from Al-Awliya, Al-Salihin, something like that, then people to know where they are so that they can visit them. They said, لا بأس بذلك.
ويستحب تسليم القبور وعدم رفعها. And it is recommended to have tasneem, to make it like a sanam, which is a hump. So to hump the grave, not to have it flat. So like a camel hump like that. And leave it like that. This is the mustahab, the preferred in the Maliki school, and not to raise it, right, with things on top, but just to make it like this. Wallahu a'lam. ولا حد في الدعاء للميت وهو واجب بين التكبيرات مستحب بعد الرابعة قال الإمام ابن أبي زيد ومن أحسن ما قيل في ذلك الحمد لله الذي أمات وأحيا الحمد لله الذي يحيي الموتى. So this is dua one could say in the four dua. له العظمة والكبرياء والملك والقدرة والثناء وهو على كل شيء قدير اللهم صل على محمد وعلى آل محمد وبارك على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما صديت ورحمت وباركت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم في العالمين إنك حميد مجيد ومن عبدك وابن عبدك وابن أمتك أنت خلقته ورزقته وأنت أمته وأنت تحييه وأنت أعلم بسره وعلانيته إلى آخره ما ذكر في العشماوي والرسالة. Other books of Maliki fiqh. Of course any dua is fine. You don't have to have it necessarily all that memorized, but whatever you could say, it will be acceptable بإذن الله تعالى. وندب تعزية أهلي بعد دفن وتهيئة طعام لهم. And it's also recommended to give condolences to the family of the deceased after the burial, and also to prepare food for them and let them not worry about food that particular day is recommended. And then we'll just finish the last section here, dealing with the ghusl, fasl, yughassilu الرجل محرمة, of who can wash whom in terms of the funeral obligatory bath. يغسل الرجل محرمه عند فقد النساء. So a man can wash his female relatives if there are no other women to do it. So the preference is for women to wash women, men to wash men. But if there's no one else, like he can wash his wife or his sister. والمرأة محرمها عند فقد الرجال. And also the woman, the same for her محرم. Right, someone that she was related to, like her husband or her brother, if there are no men to do it. لكن مع السلطرة فيهما. But everything should be covered, as we said. So whatever they were not allowed to see during life, they're not allowed to see during death.
كما تغسل الأجنبية ابن سبع فدون وتيمم الكبيرة لمرفقي.
So الأجنبية, which means someone who is not related to the deceased, and it's a young boy, if it's seven or younger than seven, she can do the ghusl for him. And if it's a man, الكبير, تُيَمِّمُ لِمِرْفَقَهِ. So here, the ghusl is not obligatory. So this, he didn't mention it specifically, but here is a reason why you would not do ghusl. If there are no males to wash a male, and there's only a non-relative female, then she would just do tayammum until his elbows. That's, till his elbows, مِرْفَقَهِ. And not to wash the body.
وَيُغَسِّرُ الرِّجَالُ الْأَجَانِبُ الرَّضِيعَ.
And as for the men, they can only wash infant girls that are not related to them. So رَضِيعَ means 2 years and younger. So anything over two, anyone over 2 years, they're not to do that.
وَيُمَمِّمُونَ الْكِبِيرَ لِكَوْعِهِ.
But if it's someone who is an older girl or a woman, then they're only going to do تَيَمَّمْ for up to her wrists, because that's all they're allowed to do in life, right?
ولا يعيب الدور دفن السقط فيها بخلاف غيره.
So if you're wondering, is it okay to be buried in my backyard, in my house? Here, this mas'ala is actually talking about in terms of value of the home. So he says, لا يعيب. It is not a blemish on the house if someone buries a stillborn baby. In other words, if I buy a house and I find there's a stillborn baby buried in the house or in the backyard, that's not a blemish where I can try to invalidate the sale. However, بخلاف غيره, but if it's someone other than the stillborn baby, like an adult or an older child, and then they didn't tell me that they buried their grandfather out in the backyard, and then I found out later, then this would be considered a blemish by which I can seek via the courts, not my way, via the courts to invalidate or at least get compensation for, you know, to lessen the value of what I paid on the house. And sometimes you find this in books of fiqh, like they'll bring some other sort of chapter that is indirectly related to this, and then they kind of finish with that. Wallahu ta'ala a'la wa a'lam, walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. With this, we have finished all of the books
and chapters dealing with prayer. And then our next session will begin with Kitab al-Zakah, so the large section that deals with zakat. Wallahu ta'ala a'la wa a'lam, walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.